City Council says no to the mayor, the Jaguars, and its owner, Shad Khan. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, why the Lot J deal just could not get done. What do you think about this? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, much-needed rent relief is on the way in Florida. If you are unemployed right now, we'll tell you all about it. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the COVID pandemic. The state added 169 new deaths to its Wednesday report from coronavirus. And the cumulative total case count has moved above 1.5 million. Now, some good news. Select public locations in St. John's and Flagler counties will begin vaccinating healthcare personnel with direct patient contact this morning, along with residents and staff in long-term healthcare facilities and anyone 65 years of age or older. This is by appointment. So get in touch with your Publix store if you're in St. John's or Flagler counties and you fall into any of those groups. Now, the other big story of the day, of course, what happened in the Jacksonville City Council chambers Tuesday night when the members voted down a proposal to build a major entertainment complex next to the Jaguar Stadium. It would have cost the taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry went on Sports Talk Radio to say that he believes personal vendettas against him and his administration are to blame for the failure of the Lot J deal. This morning, we're taking a closer look with council member Garrett Dennis. He was one of the seven members who voted down Lot J, and he has been a strong critic of Mayor Curry throughout his term in office. Council member Dennis, thanks for joining the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment. What do you think about the failure of the Lot J deal? It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page is open. It was drama in the city council chambers, councilman, Tuesday night when the deal to approve this entertainment complex failed by one vote. I want to begin by asking you your reaction to the mayor's comments. He believes vendettas against him and his administration are to blame for this deal not succeeding, and it seemed to be his comments seem to be directed in particular at you, since you've had an ongoing public beef with the mayor. What's your response?
It's unfortunate that the mayor is shifting the blame of Lot J not passing on me. You know, he says it's vendetta over vengeance. I think it was corruption over cronyism. So I think he's way off base, and it's hurtful, and it's no way to move our city forward.
What do you mean by corruption, council member?
Let me be clear. I've said this, from the beginning. Lenny Curry and his administration is probably the most corrupt administration this city has ever seen. And every deal, every policy, everything is done behind closed doors, and there's a culture of cronyism.
Do you believe the Lot J deal was corrupt, or was your criticism more that it just wasn't done transparently?
It wasn't done transparently, and I think there was a sense of greed there. The council kept expressing that we did not want the $65 million bread box alone. They weren't willing to pull back. I mean, how can you honestly go to the bond market, to the bank, and borrow $250 million for a bar and some apartments when we have drainage issues throughout our city? We have, poverty. We have, we just have issues in our city, but we put our priorities on a bar, which was the live. I mean, let's be honest, a bar and some apartments for $250 million. It's just not right, and I just can't support a deal like that.
You were one of three members, including Joyce Morgan and Randy DeFore, who voted last week to move Lot J out of committee and bring it to the full council vote. I think your no vote surprised some observers. Why did you switch from voting to advance it to voting to shoot it down?
Well, voting a bill or piece of legislation out of committee isn't indicative of how you will vote in full council. Normally, when something's in committee, you would hear council members say, well, you know, I will vote to advance out of committee, but I need X, Y, and Z before the final vote, you know, on the, you know, on council day. And so that's basically what I did. I think that's basically what we all did. We all had questions. We all said, hey, listen, you know, we still need these questions answered, but we're not going to hold it up in committee. Try to get these questions or get this worked out before before we take the final vote. And that's what I did.
What's your response to Jaguars fans who worry that this deal dying might mean that Jacksonville loses its NFL franchise?
I think they need to take a step back and say, well, is the Jaguars, you know, were they even committed to us for one deal, piece of legislation that they did not get through? Were they really committed to us? I mean, we spent $45 million of taxpayer dollars for the flex bill, for the Daly's Place. We spent another $20 million on swimming pools and the large video screen. So we've done a lot for the Jaguars since I've been on council. And for this one no, and for them to say, you know what, I'm leaving. You know, were they committed in the first place?
Jaguars President Mark Lamping, after the deal failed, said that the owner of the team, Shad Khan, wants to move on and focus on developing another parcel, the Shipyards, which is along the north bank of the St. John's River. He wants to build a Four Seasons hotel on that site, among other things. What are your thoughts about that development and how the city will play into that?
I do feel like the city needs to have some skin in the game. But at what cost? You know, at the cost of, again, infrastructure in our neighborhoods, cost of you know, not providing city services to our residents who pays the taxes. So at what cost? But I truly believe that we need to focus on the stadium and extending the lease for the Jaguars. You know, I don't want us to go and spend hundreds of millions of dollars on a development for the Jaguars or for Shad Khan, and there's no commitment to extend the lease. They said that they're not even going to talk to us about extending the lease until we come to some agreement on the stadium. I think that's priority. I think we need to start having discussions on the stadium first.
Okay. And as you lay out all of the arguments that are explaining your vote, let me ask you one quick follow-up before we go to many calls waiting on hold for you, Councilman. You and the mayor have been adversaries for years. You engaged in some very public spatting on Twitter in recent weeks that drew a lot of attention. Can you honestly say your no vote had nothing to do with your animus toward this mayor?
So let's go back. If you look at when the mayor first came out with the Lot J deal back in October, I immediately filed a bill of $41 million. And I said that day, if we were going to go to the bond market and borrow $200 million for a developer, we should also go to the bond market for $41 million for the community. I always said it shouldn't be a Lot J or the community. It could be a Lot J and the community. And I received no traction. I received no support on that. And that was my stand from day one. I support the development. But again, at what cost? And number two, it should be an and. It should be and Lot J. It should be Lot J and development infrastructure needs of the community, not just in my district, but citywide.
So you deny the mayor's accusation that you or perhaps other members of the council had a personal vendetta against him and were hoping to deliver him a political blow?
If you look at my voting record, I've probably supported the mayor, 95% of his agenda. But I'm not going to support any of his agenda if it's not right. He needs to man up and say, you know what, I lost. You know, I fumbled, I fumbled on the goal line. And he did. It was his deal. He negotiated this deal. He brought this bad deal to the council. And we did our fiduciary responsibility, and we rejected it. it was a bad deal for the citizens of Jacksonville. How can you invest a dollar but only receive 40 cents in return? Is that a good investment for the taxpayers? I mean, you know, he claims to be a fiscal conservative, but he's been a free spender, corporate welfare, mayor, and it's wrong. And I'm going to continue to defend the taxpayers of Jacksonville, whether he likes it or not. So I think he needs to, at this point, just say, you know what, I put forth a bad deal. They did their fiduciary responsibility. They rejected it. He was saying, over the past few weeks that it's the responsibility of the council. They made the decision, their choice. We made the decision. Now he's pointing fingers that it was something personal. I think he's just projecting his own, self-actualization.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, for Councilman Garrett Dennis, one of the seven council members who junked the Lot J deal Tuesday night. It lost by one vote in city council. It had been expected to pass, frankly, right up until the end. The business leaders and taxpayers, though, and civic groups spoke out heavily against the city approving hundreds of millions in taxpayer money for this entertainment complex that the Jaguars had hoped to build next to the football stadium. We have jammed lines on this hot topic this morning. Let's begin with Cynthia. She lives along the St. John's River. Hi, Cynthia. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just want to thank each of those council members who were sensitive to us, the Jacksonville taxpayers, and our desire to not invest a dollar to get 44 cents back. I thank you so much.
Okay, Cynthia. Garrett Dennis, I'm assuming you and your fellow members on the council got an earful from constituents about this deal. Tell me about the feedback you and your colleagues have been getting leading up to the vote.
I probably received over 3,000 emails, countless phone calls, and no matter where I went in our city, people were bending my ear from the barbershop to the grocery store. Everyone had an opinion on, not to vote for this deal. And I evaluated it. I heard their concerns and I made my decision.
Dallas on the South Side. Hey, Dallas, yeah. Thanks for holding. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, how you doing? In concerns of what I don't really understand is the economic part of it. And I do understand Councilman Garrett's views on investing a dollar and getting 44 cents back. But my views is, in terms of growing this city where we need to be as a city as a whole, you have thousands every single day that will pass through Jacksonville, coming from Virginia, coming from Alabama, to only go to Orlando. So in some kind of way, we need to put some kind of proposal on the table to attract some of the business from Orlando to grow this city. So rather it being a no, there needs to be some form of other proposal that can be put on the line. Because what he's saying is, well, we need some form of a lease extension from Mr. Shah Khan. Can we really understand that if any businessman would want to do something economically to grow a business, would they really have a mindset to want to pull out? That just doesn't make sense. So this genius of a developer, he's going to keep trying to develop this ghost town. And I do understand that if it's not a good deal, then we're not going to do it. But there needs to be some form of other proposal to make it happen. Because with Jacksonville being the biggest city, it's a ghost town. You don't have anything attractive that will bring this market up to where it needs to be.
Okay,
don't
Dallas.
Have anything attractive. So rather than being a no,
thanks
why
for that.
Not another proposal?
Yeah. Okay. Garrett Dennis, the 12 members on the council that voted for Lot J argued that it would spark more foot traffic, more economic development, more building downtown, that it would have a ripple effect, and that it would become a place-making focal point for the city, something that the city could hang its hat on. So what about that argument?
I read into the Wreck an article of all the live events from all the other cities around the country, and Cordish is in a lawsuit right now because of their losses. and they're in a lawsuit with their insurance.
That's the company that's done similar projects next to sports facilities around the country, right?
That is correct. And so my question to the Cordish Group, tell me what's different about Jacksonville, which is a smaller market, and here your other live, entertainment centers around the country, and they've all have lost money severely, and where you're trying to sue your insurance company to try to recoup some of the lost revenue. And they danced around it. So I understand, the caller's, his opinion and everything like that, but the facts are the facts. And they had no answer for why all the other live events they're failing around the country.
All right, Mark on the west side. Hello, Mark. Good morning. Hi,
hello.
Mark.
Good morning. I am so happy. I'm ecstatic that the city council, for the first time, the very first time, said no to an NFL owner, especially the Jaguars, in my memory anyway, and I've been here forever. I think it sends a good message to Shad Khan, who yesterday I was listening to a sports show, and one of these sports guys who should be in the know said that the anticipated renovation or rebuilding of the Jaguar Stadium is going to cost, they're going to ask the city for $1 billion. $1 billion. Which is inconceivable to me, but that's what they said. And I think this gives them a little resistance to that idea that maybe they might actually come up with a plan that is far less than that we can deal with. But also another thing, I'm tired of hearing people say that this was sort of tied to somehow, Jacksonville needs to grow and Jacksonville needs to be on the map. This is exactly what they said that when we got the Jaguar team, what happened? I don't understand what happened to the goose that laid the golden egg. This is Jacksonville, Florida. We are not in any need of any impetus to spur growth. The state of Florida is going to get 10 million people in the next 10 years, and Jacksonville, whether we did anything or not, is going to, be part of that growth. So we don't need we don't need to try to steal some of Orlando's thunder, which is impossible. So our city will grow. But I just wanted to thank the councilman. I wrote letters. I sent emails. I talked to a couple of them for finally having the backbone and the spine to say yes to the Jaguars. Thank you very much.
All right, Mark. Actually, I think you meant to say no to the Jaguars. Garrett Dennis, it is unusual for a city to tell an NFL team no.
Yeah, and so again, I don't think the seven people my six other colleagues, we voted no, was any way to say, you know what, we don't want to do this. We were just basically saying this deal is one-sided. It doesn't benefit all of us. So let's go back to the drawing board and let's see how we can make this deal a better deal for everybody. Quite frankly, the people that's footing the bill. I want to just make one comment to the caller. The caller said, we need this to grow. You know what brings people here to Jacksonville? Low crime rate, great schools, quality of life. Those are the things that attract people to a city, not a bar and some apartments next to a stadium.
We have lots of feedback on social media about the failure of the Lot J deal as we speak with Councilman Garrett Dennis, one of the seven members to vote the deal down Tuesday night. Bill tweets the show, what are they going to try to saddle taxpayers with next? I'm half joking, but it's a serious concern in light of the JEA mess and now Lot J. Finally, what are we left with in terms of permanent access to the Hart Bridge? Bill, I'm glad you tweeted that out. Of course, the ramps were brought down from the Hart Bridge leading into the city for the planned development of the Shipyards project in Metropolitan Park, which is another parcel that Jaguars owner Shad Khan is trying to develop. Here is an email from a listener. Thanks for shedding light on the Lot J steal, in quotes. And thank you to the city council who did their job by responding to the community. Shad Khan needs to pay for his dream himself. On Facebook, Laureen writes, has anyone seen the growing encampment of homeless people on our streets that continues to grow? How can we talk about growing the entertainment district when we don't even have basic amenities for our unhoused people? Garrett Dennis, if we had not been in the middle of a pandemic and a recession, and if this $65 million bread box loan, which was hugely controversial and was part of this whole package, if the timing had been different and the terms had been a little more amenable, do you think it might have passed? Or is it just that in this terrible time we're living through, that this kind of expenditure was just a bridge too far for you, your colleagues, and the voters?
I think so. I think so. It was too much with all the needs. And, you know, you hear every budget year there's not enough money. It's going to be a tight budget year. But all of a sudden, we can go and borrow $250 million. And let me put it in context. We were going to borrow money at a cost, and we were going to give it free at no cost. So at the end of the day, it would have been, you know, the taxpayers would have paid an additional almost $200 million in interest. It's wrong. And let me say this, you know, the person that just tweeted something out, he is absolutely right. As long as Lenny Curry is the mayor, we have to be on guard for the next steal, for the next heist. You know, the heart ramp coming down, when it was pitched to city council, they said it was because it would give better access to trucks going to Talleyrand. It was never about the development. And once it got passed, once other projects were scrapped to pull the money together, then we found out that it was because of the development. We've been lied to on every instance, every piece of legislation, every deal here in the city. And you just cannot trust Lenny Curry and his administration.
Now,
we're going to have to be on guard.
You're referring in particular to your ongoing criticism of the failed attempt to privatize JEA, I believe, given that on your Twitter handle, you've sometimes put at the top of your handle, I'm grateful for the FBI and the Department of Justice. I want to get your thoughts about the federal grand jury that is continuing to review the failed push to privatize JEA. The city council has already released a report on that, a committee of the city council. And now we await the federal action, if there is any. And so your thoughts about that?
Well, from the beginning, along with former councilwoman Anna Brochet, you know, we were sounding the alarm. And the mayor, he did the same thing then that he's doing now, you know, personal attacks, calling me crazy, just all these things. And you see it came out true. He was behind the sale of JEA. He was the mastermind.
Well, we don't know that. Let's be clear. We don't know that. But the committee of the council did find some ties between his administration and the utility.
I think the report, Ms. Ross, I think the report speaks for itself. Over and over and over, if you read the report, even Zahn said that he had the backing of the administration to pull this off. In the report, it says that. Mm-hmm. One man could not have pulled off stealing of $1 billion or the attempt to steal of $1 billion from JEA without the help, you know, the help of the administration and the mayor, the leader of the city. So I stand behind that. And I'm looking forward to the final report from the Department of Justice.
And as we wait for that, there's already jockeying for position for the next election cycle in Jacksonville. Mayor Curry will be termed out. He will finish his second term, and then we'll have a whole new slate of candidates. Some have already announced they're going to run, like Mr. Danford of the Urban League. What are your thoughts about the open field for the next race for mayor, and how much do you think all of these controversies will affect the mayor's race that will be coming in a couple of years?
Well, I think, you know, the next mayor, this is just my opinion, needs to be, will be someone of a steady hand, someone to, course correct on the, you know, 7-8 years of corruption. You know, in speaking of everything that has happened, JEA, Lot J, the multiple investigations of the Sports and Entertainment Center, Entertainment Department, Kids Hope Alliance, I think it's time for Mayor Curry to say, you know what, it's time for me to throw in a towel. You know, what's best for Jacksonville is for him to resign.
You think the mayor should resign?
I think the mayor should resign. I truly believe if we were in another time, another city, another governor, Mayor Curry would be suspended while this ongoing investigation is going on. And so I think for the healing and moving forward and, you know, turning a new chapter of the city, I think Mayor Curry needs to resign. I think he needs to throw in the towel and deal with his, you know, legal issues that are mounting.
We, of course, have invited Mayor Curry to appear on this program, and we'll continue to do that. And in the meantime, I want to thank you for your time with us this morning, Councilmember Garrett Dennis, one of seven to vote down the Lot J deal Tuesday night at the Jacksonville City Council. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Much more coming up later. We'll tell you how to visit the Kummer Museum of Art and Gardens for free on MLK Day and everything they have planned both virtually and on site. If you're going to do something special on Monday, that's a great tip. But up next.
We are so thrilled this finally passed Congress. It was getting really scary. It is a second batch of funding to help people who, because of COVID, are unable to pay their rent.
Some much-needed rent relief is finally on the way for thousands of unemployed across Florida. We'll take a look at what's coming and the affordable housing crisis. A conversation with Shannon Nasworth of Ability Housing after the break. That's next. You're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back.
Not now?
I do not see how that unifies the country.
Or right now?
We came close to half of the House nearly dying.
The House takes a stand against a president charged with inciting an attack on the U.S. Capitol. I'm Jen White. The latest on Donald J. Trump's historic second impeachment. Next time on 1A.
Tomorrow morning at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, much-needed rent relief is finally on the way for tens of thousands of unemployed Florida residents struggling to keep body and soul together in this pandemic and the recession that it brought with it. But, of course, the longer-term challenge is finding affordable housing for working people in Florida and in this country. For more on that, I spoke with an expert, Shannon Nasworth, CEO of Ability Housing in Jacksonville. Hey, Shannon, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's no secret Jacksonville had an affordable housing crisis even before the coronavirus pandemic began last year. It's just been a terrible year for people trying to hang on to their housing, particularly renters. So I want to begin by asking you about this rental relief measure that's coming to both Florida and Jacksonville. This is welcome news. Tell us about it.
Absolutely, and we are so thrilled this finally passed Congress. It was getting really scary. It is a second batch of funding to help people who, because of COVID, are unable to pay their rent. And it is a little bit more lenient this time because there was a lot of bureaucracy associated with the first round of CARES funding. So it hopefully will be easier for the state and local municipalities to be able to get it out to the people who need it as quickly as possible. Because we know the moratorium is going to end soon, and we've got to get people whole on their rent.
Right. The federal eviction moratorium would theoretically could end at the end of January. So do you know how this COVID-19 renter relief money will be distributed for people listening out there who need this information? What can we expect?
Right now, I don't think anyone knows because it really is beholden upon the federal government to get the information to the state and the local communities as to how they're going to get the money and how much they're going to get and how quickly. For people living in the city of Jacksonville, 630-CITY would be the information line to call. As for the other communities, I'm sure they'll have information on their websites, but they just may not know from the state yet exactly how much they're going to get or when.
All right. Well, as we wait for that information, let's talk about the affordable housing crisis. These are the issues you work on every day. Not a single city in America is a place where a renter earning minimum wage can afford market rate rent. And if you're low income, the pandemic has hit you really hard. People who are having a hard time paying the rent to begin with have just had a terrible struggle all throughout 2020. You recently received $500,000 at Ability Housing from the Jim Moran Foundation. How will those funds help your efforts to create more affordable housing for people?
Yes, I have to say 2020 was a hard year for everyone, especially the people we serve. But getting the notice from the Jim Moran Foundation that we were getting this multi-year grant was an absolute highlight of the year. So basically, it's an investment in Ability Housing. They really want to help us be able to create more affordable housing here in Northeast Florida. And so they've funded several staff positions to focus solely on creating more affordable housing here in Jacksonville and the surrounding community. And I cannot tell you how impactful this will be, because this type of investment will just compound itself year over year as we're able to increase our capacity and do more housing development.
And tell us how you go about doing that. Explain a little bit more about Ability Housing's work and how you get more people housed in places they can afford.
Absolutely. So basically, we're in a real estate development company. We build apartment communities. The difference is that we are really going after creating housing that is affordable to people who have no opportunity to afford market housing. And we rely upon government subsidy to make that possible. The biggest ones are federal subsidies that are administered at the state level, but we also work with the cities and the counties that we work in to get, you know, whether it's state affordable housing trust fund dollars or local pass-through dollars or even general revenue tax dollars from the community. As long, you know, the lower the debt is on the property, the lower our rent can go, and that's what makes it possible for us to create housing that from the outside, nobody knows is anything but housing. We have people walk in off the street all the time looking for an apartment, but they don't qualify because they make too much money.
Hmm. So a lot of people fall into that gap, it sounds like.
They do. It's really unfortunate. We have a genuine housing crisis in this country. Ever since the Great Recession, housing production just has not kept up. And I'm talking about all housing production. Population growth and people moving to different communities, there just aren't housing units for those individuals. And if you have a lower income and your selection is even, you know, smaller, the crisis just gets harder and harder for you, the greater the market pressures are. And it's really something we have to address systemically. We're talking about a market failure. And it's really creating ripple effects throughout our communities in ways that I'm not sure people really understand.
So as we await the new Biden administration being sworn in and also the spring session of the Florida legislature in March, and as we come out of the pandemic, what is on your radar for 2021 as you work through these issues?
So for 2021, I will say that the Biden administration during the campaign was really talking about housing as a policy priority. So I'm very hopeful that that will hold true and they really will help us create more revenue sources to create the housing that we need to have across our community. At the state level, you know, there are going to be difficult decisions to be made, but they still have an obligation to focus on the underlying systemic issues that were laid so bare during the pandemic. We know people need to have a safe, quality place to live, to be safe, and to keep each other safe. And while there will be difficult choices, they should not be made at the expense of low-income people who need an affordable place to live. So hopefully they will fully appropriate the trust fund dollars for the purpose they were created, which is to create more affordable housing across Florida.
More at abilityhousing.org. She's CEO Shannon Nasworth. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Well, Monday is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, of course, and the Kummer Museum of Art and Gardens is planning to celebrate Dr. King's life and legacy with a full day of free in-person and virtual programming. Your kids are out of school. Maybe you've got the day off work. This is a great option for your family. Wanda Willis, Director of Community Engagement and Inclusion at the Kummer Museum, is on the line to tell us all about it. Hi, Wanda.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm well, great, thanks. Great. And good to hear your voice. So for MLK Day, the Kummer has a lot planned. Now, you're typically closed on Mondays, but opening it up for this holiday to celebrate Dr. King's life and legacy. What's on tap?
Absolutely. We have a really great day of activities planned as we honor and the life and legacy, of course, of Dr. Martin Luther King. As you said earlier, we're normally closed, but we're actually open. We have yoga in the garden. We also make mention that we have free admission from 11 to 4 with live music sets throughout the day by jazz vocalist Akia Yawanda, take-home activities for the children. We have some virtual performances from singers at the Jacksonville Arts and Music School. And also virtually, we have a culture and conversation with our very own local community activist and leader, Rodney Hurst Sr. So just a day full of wonderful activities to celebrate and honor the life of Martin Luther King.
That sounds amazing. And, of course, you are directing not only community engagement, but inclusion at the Kummer Museum. Talk a little bit about that and how museums around the country are leaning into this in light of the Black Lives Matter movement, the Me Too movement, all of the social justice activity that we've seen across the country in recent years.
Sure, absolutely. In my role, which is diversity and inclusion as well as community engagement, the Kummer has just sort of taken a pause with everything going on in our country and certainly our community. It's really just to take a deeper dive in looking at how to create a welcoming and inclusive environment at the Kummer. If you look at museums across the country, we are supposed to be a place, sort of a center of a community, a place where open dialogue and conversation occurs. So we've taken a pause to really strategize and look at some of our programming and our exhibitions to ensure that we're able to provide an opportunity to reach out to all aspects and demographics of our community.
And so as you work on that, you have something else on tap. It's called the Art Ventures 30th Anniversary Exhibition. 30 artists from your community, from our community, I should say, have been selected to include a work. So this is a celebration of our local artistic talent. Can you tell us about how people can take this in when they visit on Monday?
Yes, absolutely. We've opened our new exhibition, the Art Adventures, which of course celebrates the 30th anniversary of Art Ventures Fund, which of course is an endowed fund at the Community Foundation for Northeast Florida. There will be 30 artists from our community that were selected to include one of their works, and you'll get the opportunity to come and look at those exhibitions and their works of art during the Martin Luther King Day, and it will also still be on tap through February 22nd.
And of course, with free admission to the museum on Monday, they can just check out everything that the museum has to offer. And there's a lot.
Absolutely. We have a lot going on at the museum. We are really very fortunate that during this time, our tagline, come take a moment, with all of the things going on in our country, just to be able to find a place where you can de-stress and enjoy the wonderful art and culture and community at the Kummer Museum of Art and Garden.
Okay, so Wanda, with all of that said, you want to explain to folks how they can visit Monday, visit the Kummer, and enjoy all of the programming. Can you talk a little bit about the process?
Sure. Because of COVID, of course, we are taking all precautions as outlined with the CDC guidelines for safety. So what we're doing is, although it's a free admission, we request that people register online so that there's a timed entry so that we can limit the number of people in the museum to provide safety as we go through this COVID virus.
Okay, and you can book your ticket at kummermuseum.org. So free admission Monday, lots of special stuff planned for the MLK holiday, but Let's mention, too, thanks to Vistar Credit Union, PNC Bank, Wayne and Dolores Weaver, and Florida Blue, you have several dates on the calendar every month where people can come in for free. And people need to mark those,
Absolutely.
Too, right?
Absolutely. Mark your dates for Tuesdays and Fridays. And we're, of course, so very grateful for our sponsors to make this happen so that we have free admission and accessibility to all people in our community. So I hope people will come out and join us. And I did want to also mention that as part of our diversity and inclusion efforts, we have created what we call Culture and Conversation, where we host several Zoom webinar sessions with various artists of color. And of course, tonight we're very excited to have Abra Lee, who is a renowned horticulturist, who will be talking about Garden Lady. So I think you'll find that very interesting to join that tonight as well as part of our Culture and Conversation series. That is, you can also find information about that and register for that event on CummerMuseum.org as well.
And you know, Wanda, with everything we've been through, pandemic, recession, a second impeachment of the president, protests, the insurrection at the Capitol, people scrambling to get unemployment relief, and on and on and on and on, death from COVID. Art can be healing, and your museum, I think, is a healing and restful and therapeutic place to visit. So is it your hope that these opportunities can be therapeutic, I think, for people?
Absolutely, Melissa. You're absolutely correct on that. In these past few months, as we have started to really sort of evaluate and look at what we do as a museum and how we can be that healing force, our team has really worked really hard to, of course, we've all had to pivot in how we do things, initially really trying to make sure that we present programming that is not only in person but virtual, but really taking a deep look at how we can be that healing place. We all know that art is healing, and we're, of course, very fortunate at the Commerce to have the beautiful gardens as well. So we're hoping that people will come take a moment and enjoy the beautiful gardens and the wonderful art and culture that we provide at the Comer as really a time of healing and a place for solace and peace.
Absolutely right. So book your ticket now for free admission Monday to the Comer at CummerMuseum.org. Wanda Willis, Director of Community Engagement and Inclusion at the Comer Museum of Art and Gardens. Wanda, thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa, for having me. Thank you.
And in a moment, how one urban farm here on the First Coast is growing and providing high-quality produce for the whole community. We'll drop in on White Harvest Farms after this. Don't go away.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com. Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and services tailored for active retirees. Information at vickerslanding.com.
Inspired by America's wide open terrain, Dvorak's New World Symphony is known as one of the most popular in the repertoire. Gonzalo Farias makes his Jacksonville Symphony Masterworks debut on January 22nd and 23rd, leading the orchestra's presentation of the work the New York Herald said is a noble composition of heroic proportions that produced a hymn and an anthem to what American music can be. Visit jacksymphony.org for tickets.
Next time on The World, Brazilians had high hopes for CoronaVac. That's a Chinese vaccine that's easy to handle and cheaper than some others.
The vaccine is produced in China and imported from China to Brazil, at least in the first million doses, and then it's going to be produced locally.
But new test results show that CoronaVac is barely over 50% effective. A new COVID quandary for Brazil on The World.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
Not now?
I do not see how that unifies the country.
Or right now?
We came close to half of the House nearly dying.
The House takes a stand against a president charged with inciting an attack on the U.S. Capitol. I'm Jen White. The latest on Donald J. Trump's historic second impeachment. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, did you know that one of the initiatives at downtown's Clara White Mission is a farm? Yeah, it's called White Harvest Farms, and it's a 10-acre urban farm and training center in the Moncrief Springs neighborhood in the city of Jacksonville. Mallory Schott is the White Harvest Farms manager, and she's on the line now to tell us more about this. Hey, Mallory, good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Okay. As we kick off this new year, you've got big plans for White Harvest Farm. Now, you've been around for some time, but there's a lot happening this year. Tell us about it. What's happening?
Yeah, so we are actively engaging the community on the farm this year, providing meaningful outdoor experiential learning opportunities, volunteering classes, and a farmer's market on a weekly basis. So we've got a lot going on, and we're just so excited to be offering this to the community.
Now, White Harvest Farms and your farmer's market on Moncrief Road takes part in Florida's Fresh Access Bucks, or FAB, program. And this is an initiative to open up access to healthy, local, fresh produce for SNAP recipients, formerly known as food stamp recipients. So your mission really is to get healthy, fresh produce into food desert communities. Talk a little bit about that mission.
Yes. So our farm is serving a community located in a food desert where they don't have the same healthy food options that we're used to often. So the FAB program is an incredible grant program that basically allows us to give 50% off on our produce for anybody who's using SNAP or EBT at our market. So it really makes this healthy, local, organic food that we grow more accessible to our community.
And you're planting and seeding spring and summer crops right now, correct?
Yeah, we are busy seeding. Right now we're seeding kale, collards. We're still seeding broccoli and cauliflower, beets, and we're getting prepared to start seeding those tomatoes and peppers for the spring once it warms up.
Okay, and this is exciting. You've got your first market opening of the year in February, and people can enjoy all of your bounty and everything that you're doing. How can people be part of this?
Yeah, so you can come to our farm. We have volunteer opportunities on Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. Sign-ups for volunteering is through Eventbrite, and you can find that link on our social media pages. The farmer's market is every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that's where you can come and buy some of our produce, lettuce, radish, kale, collards, turnips, mustard greens, everything that's in season. And then also on Eventbrite are links to join our classes. So we offer a composting class, introduction to gardening class, as well as an herbal tea and edible weeds class, and that is on a rotating basis weekly.
And this is really what you're doing at White Harvest Farms. It's part of the urban farming movement that's just taken off like wildfire across America. And why do you think that's become so popular?
Well, I think because of the changing times, we all saw at the beginning of, you know, COVID that the grocery stores were empty and unreliable, and I think that people got kind of shook up and they sort of had this fire ignited inside them to, you know, start growing food again. So we definitely see a lot of people visiting, wanting to know more, wanting to know how to grow food themselves. And so we are just so, I am so happy and honored to be in the position to spread this information with our community.
And if people want to volunteer, what are some of the volunteer opportunities you have? Will people get their hands dirty? You know, will they get the chance to actually get in and plant some crops?
Absolutely. Often on Fridays, we are planting, doing bed prep. Tuesdays are our harvest days. If you visit on Tuesday, we'll have you help us with harvesting. And then on Saturdays, we usually make compost. So we're funded through an NRCS Conservation Innovation Grant. And so we have mastered the art of making thermophilic compost that heats up to 160 degrees three times before we put it on our crops. So usually often we're making compost on Saturdays. So definitely opportunities to get your hands in the dirt outside. Great COVID-friendly experience to get out of the house each time.
Right. I think it's fantastic. And at this time of year especially, I'm sure lots of people would find this so appealing. So if you're interested in volunteering or visiting White Harvest Farms, email them, whiteharvestfarms@clearawhitemission.org. Check out their Facebook or Instagram or Eventbrite pages. Just search White Harvest Farm for more on the farmers market, the class schedule, volunteering opportunities, and all the rest of it. Mallory Schott is the manager at White Harvest Farms. Mallory, thanks so much and happy harvesting.
Yes, thank you, Melissa.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. We appreciate all your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and catch our podcast up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow to discuss a busy news week in our Friday roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.